Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Melanie, this is like, I think, a record. 2 weeks in a row, we have feedback.
Wow, I love that.
I like this trend. Please send your feedback. I want to hear from you. We want to hear your questions, your comments. We'd love to hear from those of you who are listening. So our first bit of feedback comes from Michael, who wrote on YouTube, the StarQuest YouTube channel, youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. I really ought to look that up to make sure that's correct, but that's what I think it is. Anyway, I've just been saying it on podcasts, but and I'm pretty sure that's what I labeled it as, but look it up. Anyway, it'll be in the show notes. Michael says, I do agree. We talked about Encanto last week. I do agree that Encanto went pretty fast. I disagree about the music because that's been stuck in my head since I watched it. LOL. We had said that the music didn't really grab us. I think that overall Encanto was a solid movie, especially since Disney's not very good with their stories right now. And this was cute with enough solid elements for me to watch it again.
I would definitely put it in the watch again category.
Yes.
And I wouldn't say the music was like, well, the two songs did stick in my head. It was just, I don't really remember any of the other songs.
Right. So we don't talk about Bruno, which is kind of ironic. Did you know, I saw that it is the first Disney song to hit number one on the Billboard charts since Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I also read an article that was talking about how they've changed the Billboard charts so that they're also looking at streaming songs.
Right.
It argued that if
people had to buy it.
No. If we looked at streaming, like streaming includes like hits by, you know, kids who want to listen to the same song a million times. And
sure.
So I suggested that if other Disney hit movies songs had been considered like not by album purchases, but by
plays
of individual songs, that we would have seen Let It Go and, you know, songs from The Lion King,
oh, yeah,
The Little Mermaid, and other songs would have hit easily as much. It's just that we've changed the metric for looking at how we rate music.
Well, we changed the way we consume music, really.
Right.
I mean, I suppose the comparable metric from when we were kids was plays on radio. Like,
right.
Especially like requested plays on radio. That would have been a closer metric to streaming, I guess.
Right. Because with streaming, if you play the song like that's really super catchy over and 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 over again, you don't even need that many people listening to it to hit as many listens.
Right. It doesn't represent as many people as would say buy a million records.
Right. Like is buying the album.
Yeah, I get that.
Which and actually the article I read was kind of interesting in that it talked about like why we don't talk about Bruno, especially like why certain songs are much more like playable over and over and over again. And it talked about one of the things is that if there's something like that you're trying to figure out, like you're trying to see how the parts of the song work together or the meaning or how it works in the context of the show, you might listen to it more times.
Yeah.
So it's not just catchiness, like this is an earworm and I'm playing it to get it out of my ear, but it's also this sort of, it's a complex song. There's a lot of lot of stuff going on. And so you kind of need to hear it a few times to be able to pick out the different pieces.
Like we've talked about, like Dolores's part where she says, I still hear him, which when you first hear it sounds like, oh, my memory makes him present to me. But no, she's literally still hearing him because he hasn't gone anywhere.
Right.
So, yeah. So you'll have to listen a few times. I get that. But as far as Michael's comment, like...
No,
that's fine. About disagreeing about the music, I just don't find... Like, apart from those two songs, Bruno and Luisa's Pressure song, I just like you, I don't find them as catchy as, say, so many of the songs on the Moana soundtrack, which we listened to, as you know, over and over again.
Now, granted, maybe after watching the movie another time, I might find some of the other songs catchy. I'm just talking about, like, first listen,
yeah,
what got stuck in my head.
But, and I will say, the story I find compelling in a way, because it's complex, it's got depth, it's interesting. The story of Abuela and Mirabel's role, the family roles, and the roles that the people are playing in the family, and how they are archetypes, and all this other stuff. That I find that aspect of the story actually kind of compelling. The more I've thought about it, in fact, over the past week and read some articles, yeah, I've been finding it more compelling from that point of view. So I mean, it's okay. It was an okay movie. It's not my favorite Disney movie. It's better than Frozen. I think I've only ever watched Frozen once. It doesn't quite measure up to Moana. For me, I'm trying to think of other Disney animated, Pixar animated. I think maybe it's better than Coco. Although I like the music in Coco. But
I didn't see Coco, so I can't.
Yeah, I did a episode of Secrets of Movies and TV Shows on that, and it was good. And I mean, the soundtrack on that, I mean, I love the mariachi style music that was represented. I think it might be better than Coco, though. So, you know, of recent Pixar musical ones, what did you compare to Luca? Which would you say you like better, Luca or this?
Oh, that's tricky.
It's hard to say. I don't remember any of the songs from Luca off the top of my head.
Were there songs in Luca?
Yes, I think so.
I have no idea.
Now that you say, maybe I don't remember them because there weren't any. I just kind of assumed it's a Pixar animated. It must have had songs, but I can't think of anything. There must have been songs.
I don't think there were.
Okay, but I liked Luca for what it was. I thought it was a pretty good story. Anyway, you can go back and listen to our discussion of it from last year. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to rank them, these latest ones.
I'm also always a little bit reluctant to give like solid rankings to something I've only seen once, because oftentimes, as we've seen in our great Marvel rewatch,
yes,
my second opinions are often much higher than my first impressions.
Right, right.
So
okay, yeah. But so thank you, Michael, for your feedback. We really appreciate that. Our next feedback comes from Elizabeth, who sent an email, and she says, I was just listening to the latest episode of Raising the Bets, and I just wanted to say thank you for your discussion about this past week's mass readings. It's always nice to have reflections that I can listen to when I'm not also trying to watch kids in the pews. I've been there.
Yep.
And I found this week's reflection especially helpful. I know you guys have mentioned these resources in the past, but what reflections do you read or listen to on the weekly readings, obviously besides your priest weekly homily? My husband and I are looking for maybe homilies or other resources that we can listen to or read on the way home from Mass to act as a way to deepen our reflection on the readings. Well, there's a couple of things that you and I both look at, and we've mentioned before. So Mount St. Mary's Abbey, the Trappistine sisters, Cistercians sisters.
Yes.
They're on their website, and I'll have a link in the show notes, they have a section called Lectio Divina, where Mother Sophia will write reflections, but she doesn't do it every week.
No, it's kind of sporadic, and I follow them on Facebook, and I think they haven't done anything since mid-January.
Yeah, January 23rd was the last one on the website. So 2 weeks ago, they had one.
Yeah.
But
she does.
Yeah.
She'll do a whole bunch in a row, and then we'll be doing other things.
She'll be busy or whatever.
Right.
I feel like during Advent and Lent, she's more regular.
Right. Maybe she's doing more.
Yeah.
Reflections for retreats and that sort of thing.
I don't know. But when she does write, it's always good.
I sometimes read Father Philip
Powell, Dominican.
He's a Dominican, and he was chaplain for a while at the University of Dallas, and my sister got to know him really well and introduced me to his He sometimes puts his homilies on a blog.
On a blog, yeah.
Which he links to from Facebook. I always find his worth reading.
Okay. Are there any other priests who... I don't think...
Does Father Roger Landry still do reflections?
Yes. Go to catholicpreaching.com. I'm glad you mentioned that because I totally forgot to write that down. Catholicpreaching.com, Father Roger Landry. He's been posting his homilies every day, not just weekly, every day for years. And in full disclosure, I help him with, like, created his website for him. But
so you really should have remembered.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's the problem of knowing too well. But like, if you go, he's got it organized by, you know, year A, year B, year C, weekday, year one, weekday, year two. He has talks and retreats that he's given, is all kinds of stuff. Definitely go check that out. He'll cover the same readings multiple times. Like, every time it comes up, he'll have a new homily. And so it is really, definitely highly recommended. Father Roger Landry is very talented. He's a priest of the Diocese of Fall River in Massachusetts, and also right now works for the Vatican at the UN, which is kind of cool, at their mission. I used to work for his brother, his twin brother, Scott, and I fully expect Father Roger will be Bishop Roger someday, but we'll see how that happens. I'm going to make a note of that so I put it in the show notes.
I'm trying to think. To be honest, I don't read reflections.
A lot of reflections.
That often.
Yeah. Well, let me give another one, which I've used for years, which is Scott Hahn's St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. So if you go to stpaulcenter.com and you look under, let me make sure I get the right thing, under for priests, there's on the menu for priests, Sunday Bible Reflections. And Scott, has audio, so he does a podcast, but he also has a little written bit, a few hundred words, not long at all. You know, the audio is like 3 minutes long, where he talks about the readings for this coming week. So it's designed to kind of help priests write their homily. So that is really nice.
I think I used to subscribe to that on email, and then I got overwhelmed with too much email, and I unsubscribed at some point.
Yeah, yeah. But it's nice. Other things I know people use, the Word Among Us booklet and the Magnificat. I don't really get either of those, but those would be nice things to have to read. I love the idea of, reading or listening to something on the way home from Mass. Although we used to read the Sunday readings on the way to Mass to kind of prep ourselves for it.
I used to do that, and we got out of the habit.
Well, I think it ended when we had the lockdown and Mass got was at home for 3-4 months.
Yeah, I think we kind of stopped before that.
It's a nice thing to do to kind of fix the readings in your mind before they're proclaimed.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a nice idea, and to kind of talk about the homily on the way home. That also helps fix it in your mind, especially. There's always someone in the family, often me or you, who kind of was a little fuzzy during the homily. Mm-hmm. And so that helps the fuzzy one to remember what it was about.
Yeah, we had to do that today on the way home. I really liked the bits of the homily that I caught, but our visiting priest had a thick accent. And
yes,
I did recount the bits that I remembered. Sophie said she was having a hard time. Paying attention, staying awake,
yeah,
focusing.
But
it's good.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that homily at the end. But so those are just some resources you can check out. Those are if anyone has anything that they use that they particularly enjoy that's particularly helpful for them, send us some feedback. Let us know, and we'll share it with everyone.
I feel like I'm missing something.
Something that you use
that I read, but I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My brain is blanking. If I think of it,
Office of Readings,
we'll mention it later. I do like to listen to the Office of Readings, although that's not really...
Not really the Mass readings.
The Mass readings. It's just separate.
Father Bishop Barron, I'm still trying to break myself of that habit. Bishop Robert Barron has a daily reflection on the gospel of the day, which includes Sunday. So that's another one. Anyway, Hope that helped. And thank you both, Elizabeth and Michael, for your feedback. So we didn't do much this past week. It's been cold and blah weather and just winter, and I hate it, and I'm tired of winter, and I want spring. So but you did have to take Bella to the oral surgeon this week.
Oh, well,
yeah, that's fun. it was an adventure.
Well, it was a misadventure.
A misadventure, yes.
So yeah, when she went to the dentist back in November, they said that her wisdom teeth were starting to erupt and she should really see an oral surgeon about that. And they gave me a referral. And well, in November, we weren't living at home and the people they were referring to me were like an hour away. And so I put the referral thing into my bag and then promptly forgot about it.
Right.
And then I finally remembered that it was there, especially when she started complaining about her teeth hurting as they're starting to erupt. And so I called the surgeon and I made an appointment. And then, as I recall, we had to change the appointment date. Oh, because we all got COVID.
We all got COVID. Right? So, yeah.
And then, yeah. So finally Friday was the appointment and I had called and made sure that they had the x-rays and I'd filled out all the online paperwork. And then we got there and I handed her the insurance card and she took one look at it and said, "We don't take this insurance."
That would have been nice to know.
So I'm not 100% sure what happened. I didn't have Bella's card with me when I made the appointment. I had your card, which had a different number on it, but yeah. She didn't. But I don't know. She didn't say that they didn't take it.
But it's the same insurance. It has a different number, but it's still the same. We have a family dental plan. So, yeah, she said that they don't take the Delta Dental EPO, and that's what we have, and it's just a mess. It's always, I don't know what it is with the insurance, and especially the dental insurance, it's always a mess.
So we drove there in an ice storm, by the way, on Friday.
Friday
afternoon. Bella was supposed to be doing a D&D online D&D campaign, and so she had to leave that early to go to the appointment, and they'd asked us to come in early because of the ice, so she had to leave the D&D game especially early. And we got there driving on really bad road with bad conditions,
right?
And yeah, it was a wasted trip. I was so mad.
Yeah,
I was just really frustrated and furious. And now she's in pain. She's crying most days because her teeth hurt. And who knows when we will be able to get her into another surgeon. She'll need to get the evaluation done, and then she'll need to schedule for the actual surgery. And so it could be weeks.
Yeah. It's just, I hate insurance. I hate the whole kit and caboodle. It's all always a mess. Yeah. I hate dealing with them.
So that was our only real adventure this week, and it was not a fun adventure.
Not a good adventure. This is a bad adventure. I went and get my eyes checked, and apparently they're just as bad as always. They're fine. They're fine.
I need to do that.
Yeah.
I so need to do that.
Okay, so the other thing I thought we could talk about was the thing that everybody's doing these days, which is Wordle. Now, Wordle, in case you're out of touch on social media on this, is a word game where you have to enter in a five-letter word. It's all five-letter words. And you're trying to guess a five-letter word. And you get six chances. And you type in a word, and it will say, this letter is in the right place. It's a letter that's in the word, and it's in the right place. So it'll mark it green.
Right. It's a word guessing game. You have to guess real words every time. You can't just type in
random letters,
random nonsense syllables. So you're trying to find out the mystery word by guessing.
Right.
A bunch of different words.
So you enter a word, and if it's the right letter in the right place, it's green. If it's the right letter, but in the wrong place, it's yellow. And then you get six chances to guess it. And if you don't, the thing is it's gone viral. And the magic formula for this is, I think, that there's no extra frou-frou around it. It's very straightforward. There's no advertising. It doesn't make itself, it doesn't push its identity on your thing. Like, so you can post your score, but it doesn't post a link back to the Wordle website. Like, I had to Google Wordle to find it so I could play it. It was, I saw other people doing it. It's very, and is, you only get one game a day. We'll talk about in a second about how to play the archives, but the original conception of it is one word a day. You get it once, and then you have to wait till tomorrow to do the next one. Everybody plays it. And the nice thing is most people, because if you know what the solution is, it ruins the game. And most people are good about it. They're not ruining the game for other people, at least not intentionally. Sometimes people say things like, oh, this is so hard. I did something and it did this. And people go, oh, that made me guess what your word was. What the word was. And then, so it's a lot of fun. And then you've been playing the Wordle archives, though.
They downloaded them all, and you can work your way through the entire archive of Wordle.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my Facebook friends actually finished the entire Wordle archive.
That's 2,315 words. No, oh, so far. Oh, okay.
200.
230. There's 230 so far.
Right.
So there's 2,315 words in the whole game. So there's 7 years worth of words in it.
But the archive is
only ones that have already been out.
Right.
So the game has been out for 230 some odd days already.
Yes.
So the story is this guy created it for his wife who likes word games and who was bored at home during the lockdown. And so he created for her, and then she shared it with friends, and it just kind of spread from there. And now he just sold it to the New York Times for seven figures, which is several million dollars. Seven figures is over $1 million. So, which is kind of funny. Everyone just assumes they'll ruin it.
Yeah.
But I just assume these things, they come, they go, they last for a while, then they go away.
It's fun for a while, but yeah. I expect that after a while I would get bored with it anyway.
So. Yeah, and I think a lot of people will get bored and walk away, and it won't be as much fun, and so on and so forth. And
I think the
New York Times will just have wasted right. its money.
I think it's partly because it's a daily thing. It's kind of like the daily crossword.
Yeah.
If you have other people who are doing the same crossword, there's a camaraderie in all working on the same puzzle at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, I got it first, or I got it in three guesses. Oh, I got it in two guesses. There's a little bit of competitiveness. Competitiveness, right? I think that's part of what makes it fun too.
As well as do you have a starting word, or you just choose a word at random? What's your strategy? I know couples who won't share their starting word with each other, like Barbara Saskevich. You know Barb and Tom.
Uh-huh.
So Barbara says that her husband Tom has been trying to get. I think it's Tom has been trying to get the word, her starting word out of her, and she refuses to give it to him. Mine's raise, R-A-I-S-E. And what's funny is yours is...
I don't always use the same one. I've used raise or arise.
Arise, which is the same word, just the same letters, just in a different order, which is funny. But
I'm not as consistent as you are.
Yes, I'm superstitious in that if I change my word, that will be the word. That will have been the one I should have used. I admit to being somewhat superstitious like that. Anyway, Wordle. It's check it out before the New York Times has ruined it. It's fun. And there are tons of clones out there, and most of them not as good. So
the one clone, I'm not even actually sure if it's a clone. Somebody did a map game where you're trying to guess
the geography one.
Geography.
Yeah.
You're trying to guess a country in the world.
Global,
I think.
G-L-O-B-L-E. Yeah. There's a Latin one. There's a Star Wars one. There's a Lord of the Rings one. There's a bird one. I've seen a ton of them. Yeah. And like some of our friends are like, we'll do 8 or 9 of them a day, like in a row. Like that's way more commitment to that than I am interested in. I'll just do my one.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about food.
Okay.
So last time I talked about making this stock for beef pho, Vietnamese soup stock. So this week was time to make the pho itself, to make the soup. So, the soup was supposed to have eye round. I only had bottom round meat from the market.
It was fine.
But it was fine. It's a little chewier than the eye round would have been. And I had a lot of the ingredients, but we needed some. And so you went out to the Asian market.
To the Vietnamese.
The Vietnamese market.
I did. Lucy and I went. It was wet and rainy and foggy, super foggy, and we almost lost our way.
Which is kind of funny because it's like take a right at the end of our street and go straight.
Pretty much. It was really foggy.
Yeah.
Lucy had never been to an ethnic market, I don't think, before.
Oh.
And she found it really fascinating. I mean, they had, you know, the fish counter with whole fish and all sorts of exotic.
Did they have live fish
and stuff? I think that there was a tank with live fish in it. Uh-huh. All sorts of vegetables and greens and fun stuff. And then, of course, shelves and shelves and shelves of
packaged goods. Right.
Spices and noodles, like a billion types of noodles.
Right.
Which was awesome. Lucy's jaw just kind of dropped. She's like, that's a lot of noodles. So we got some noodles. I got several different packages of noodles.
The rice vermicelli, yeah.
Some and bean noodles too. I picked up some spicy ramen for Sophie because she loves
spicy ramen. I tried this. It is so spicy.
It is the most, I've never seen a product that's that red before.
Like, if I were 20 years old again, I would be diving into it. I'm too old for this amount of spice now. I mean, I'm like, oh.
Sophie's had two bowls so far.
Yeah. It's pretty darn spicy.
And, I got some.
So we got a bunch of veg, like produce sort of stuff?
Yeah, like basil, mint, watercress.
Cilantro, which is one of the greens that you put in pho.
And they had some really nice fresh green beans. Our grocery store has not had good looking green beans in a long time. And this package of green beans looked so good. I just couldn't resist.
Okay, here's one thing I'm going to say with shopping right now. A lot of big supermarkets, are at least around us, are having shortages of common things. Go to the small markets, the ethnic markets, the local places, especially the ethnic markets, because they have access to supply chain that the big stores don't. Different supply chains. That's my tip, is to check them out, and like including for like meats and stuff like that. So anyway,
yeah. But yeah, I think we were probably the only English speakers in the market too.
Nice.
It was. I remember the time when you and I went to a Chinese market in Texas when I was pregnant with Isabella.
Oh yes.
And that was almost a disaster. I think I ended up having to wait out in the car because
the smell
of the fish was very strong. And I remember thinking that I would not have been able to go to this market when pregnant because the fish smells would have killed me. I'm fine with them when I'm not pregnant, but oh my goodness, I get such a bad food smell sensitivity.
I remember that was the market where I bought the bottle of black vinegar, the Chinese black vinegar. Yeah, that's my song. I really want to go to the market now. I want to buy some stuff to do some interesting cooking.
We also got some cookies, Chinese cookies.
Oh yeah,
the wafer cookies. I love those.
I mean there are Americanized versions of that and British versions of that. I'm guessing those came from like Hong Kong or something.
Probably.
Yeah, because they had English writing on them too.
Yeah, I think that they. I think Lucy said the one said Hong Kong on it.
Yeah. So, but they're good. One was chocolate, one was orange cream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good. Good cookies. It was fun. It's fun. I love going to those markets and like different markets. There's a new African market that opened near us
that we
need to go to this place because it'll be awesome. I can't wait to get some stuff and try some new recipes. So how did the pho turn out?
It was good. It was a little too salty.
I've made a note. So I converted it to make more because we always have to do that. I think in the future when I convert it, I need to I did like 1.5 times. I should not do 1.5 times the amount of salt that I called for. Do less of the salt. I don't think you need to add the same amount of salt above and beyond.
Or you could just add a little bit less fish sauce, frankly.
Was the fish sauce too much?
It was a little on the fishy side. Like, I don't think beef pho should taste fishy.
Okay. All right. Then maybe I'll dial back on the fish sauce then.
It was good. It was really good.
Yeah, it went from 1/2 cup to 3/4 cup because I went 1.5 times. So maybe 1/2 cup would have been fine as it was.
Yeah.
But it was good. obviously not as good as the restaurant that we go to, but you know, for making it at home, I was pretty happy. I would do this again. Definitely would do that again. So the other thing I just want to say in the realm of cooking tonight, I made the pork fajitas again that I made a couple weeks ago that I talked about, but I made it in a cast iron pan.
Big mistake.
Make a note, no cast iron meat cooking in the winter when the windows are closed, because our house just fills with smoke. We have poor ventilation and are always always sets off the smoke detectors. It's just a...
It's not even the smoke detectors. It's like, I like to breathe.
Well, yes, it was also just very smoky. Just, we can only cook with cast iron when we can have the windows wide open. It's just that's the downside of it. I really, one thing I wish our kitchen had was a vent hood that vented outside that would suck the air out from above the stove outdoors. I think that should be... Like most vent hoods just blow the smoke up to the ceiling, like above your head.
I'm not sure what the point of that is.
To move it out of the way of your face, I guess. I don't know. I think all vent hoods should vent outside, and they used to. I don't know why they stopped doing that. I mean, I guess I know one reason is because it sucks heat out of the house at the same time. But good Lord, it was so smoky. So no more cast iron meat cooking in the winter. That's the way that is. All right, let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. I finished watching Lost in Space on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
Final season. Finally. I mean, they started like 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago. This is was the third or fourth season. I forget how many seasons it was, but it was the final season. The kids are all grown up. They kind of put a pin in that because they have like a gap of a year in between the seasons in the show. So you know, the fact that this kid is now taller than his parents when he was like a 10-year-old when it started, they kind of explained it that way. And it was pretty good. The end was satisfying. I really enjoy the dynamics of the parents, the mom and the dad. Those are good. Those were really good. I find the daughter Penny to be the least believable of the character kids because she is so stinking competent at everything. She's just kind of perfect, and it's kind of annoying and too much, frankly. Uh-huh. Is it Penny or Judy? I forget. Judy. It's the girl. It's the daughter who's the doctor.
Have no idea.
At 22 years old or something really young. But she's like perfect at everything. It was like a little hard to believe.
Was she a doctor like when they set off on their journey?
Yes, she was a doctor before they started.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little hard to swallow how stinking competent they all were. But anyway, it was fun, amusing. The action was big. I like the tech. I'm always big on the tech of the things. The relationship between Will Robinson and the robot was good. So it was a satisfying conclusion to the series. So that was good. You finished a book?
I did. The most, like, every book I picked up at the beginning of the year was just not hitting it for me. And then finally I picked this book up and it was like, you know, when you've been in a overheated room and then you step outside in the wintertime and you get that nice cold blast of air on your face.
Yep.
It totally felt like that, like just really refreshing and exactly what I was in the mood for. So it's called I Swear by Apollo, and it's by Margaret Ogola. I read it's a sequel to a book I read a couple years ago, which was called The River and the Source.
Uh-huh.
And Margaret Ogola is a Kenyan author, and both of these books won prizes. She was a Catholic and a doctor herself. And so this book takes place sometime later when two of the characters who were kids in the first book, at the end of the first book, are grown up now. Johnny and Alicia, their mom had died of AIDS, and they were taken in by their aunt and uncle. And now they're grown-ups, and Johnny is studying to be a doctor just like his aunt and uncle are. And so he's in medical school. And the title comes from the Hippocratic Oath. You might recognize it if you're familiar with the Hippocratic Oath. It begins, "I swear by Apollo and the other various Greek deities who are associated with healing and medicine." And it's interesting because the family in general are people of faith, although the first book, The River and the Source, followed several generations, the family through several generations, from before first contact with Europeans to the early 20th century or mid 20th century. And this picks up, it's set more in modern day.
Mm-hmm.
And so Johnny's kind of agnostic. He might even call himself atheist, but his aunt and uncle are Catholic. And he gets into it with one of the teachers at medical school, who starts to say that the Hippocratic Oath is old-fashioned and ridiculous, and he starts mocking the idea of swearing by all these gods and goddesses that nobody believes in. And Johnny says, well, shouldn't we swear by something, like, that we hold sacred? Isn't medicine something, a higher calling, a sacred calling?
Right.
And that's kind of one of the themes of the novel, is this idea of medicine as not just a profession, but a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot in the novel about the ethical questions of medicine, and what it means to be called to be a doctor. But there's also some satisfying relationships, characters who both of them, as they come to adulthood and trying to find spouses and their way in the world. And I don't know, it's just a really satisfying novel about people. Johnny and Alicia's dad was a Canadian who had married their mom, and then she kind of pushed him away and had divorced him. And then she died, and the father had gone back to Canada and had not connected, you know, not kept in contact with his kids. He kind of sort of, they're better off without me. And then he comes back into their lives, and there's this there's a lot of really poignant reconnecting with his adult children.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that they actually did need him, and some hard moments, and then some really beautiful reconciliation. And I felt like, on the sort of level of spirituality and human connectedness, this novel just really worked well for me. I loved the characters, and I loved the tensions and the resolutions. Really a lot about the importance of family in Africa, like how very important family and faith are.
Okay.
And I really, yeah, highly recommend Margaret Ogallo's River and the Source and I Swear by Apollo. Two really good books set in Kenya. And I felt like the first one especially gave a good sense of sort of overview of Kenyan history and culture.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good. So, and then, as we mentioned, continuing our Marvel rewatch today, yes, we watched Captain America: Civil War. So we went from the comedic romp of Ant-Man to, mm-hmm, the grimness of Captain America: Civil War, as we knew that was coming.
Right. As Bella said, in Civil Wars, there's never really a right side and a wrong side.
Yeah. Yeah. In the American Civil War, there was a right side,
but
everyone loses in a way.
Right. Everybody loses.
It's really not so much that there's a right and a wrong side. There's rarely a winner in it. But at least in this Civil War, there were good points to be made on both sides. And it was hard to suss out who was really right in the elements that set the Civil War in motion, which is the whole Sokovia Accords question about, should superheroes have oversight by politicians? Should they be essentially vigilantes acting on their own?
Right. I felt like this time through, I was really kind of thinking about the question, and I felt like one of the things that it didn't really satisfactorily, I'm not saying this is a flaw in the movie, but the Sokovia Accords themselves didn't satisfactorily address is when you've got emerging critical situations that are time sensitive, how on earth do you have a governing body, like a political body, a board, making those decisions? Because split second decisions sometimes need to be made. And in the movie, there's the perfect example. Like, there's the mad Russian who's, you know, going to do something time sensitive, and you've got to go run and stop him. And there's not time to go get permission to convince everybody who thinks that they're right, that they're wrong and you're right, because they don't believe that your source of intel is valid. Like, there is a sort of a critical time sensitive moment there. And I didn't feel like they had addressed how the Sokovia Accords were going to
deal with that. A committee of the UN would oversee them and approve their missions. But it's like, has anyone ever seen
approval by a committee?
Yeah, well, not just any committee, but a UN committee. Like, UN committees are terrible at doing anything. The UN is a terrible deliberative body for getting things done. Like, the Security Council, you've got Russia and China and the U.S. sitting there on, you know, and Britain, and we're all, you know, and plus whatever other countries have joined the council for the short term. It's a rotating seats. And it's like, it's impossible to make any serious decisions. It's like, which is why in the United States, the president is the commander in chief, because when, like, Congress has to declare a war, but the president can take action in extreme emergencies. In emergencies, the president can deploy troops to defend or whatever, you know?
Right.
You need one person who's the person who decides in emergency situations, because there isn't time to gather the politicians to deliberate when the Chitauri are attacking New York City in the Battle of New York.
Right. I felt like somebody in the movie could have perhaps
brought that up.
If there was one flaw in their deliberations, it was that nobody said, hey, how is this supposed to work exactly? I felt like that could have been
a
moment.
I felt that the debate, that for initial debate, lacked any good argumentation. There was a few things thrown out here and there, a few good points here and there, but nobody really got to the heart of the matter so that you could dig into it and say, look, here's a solid objection. Here's a solid reason to do it.
It was kind of wimpy as debates go.
Yeah.
They were mostly interested in the character moments and the personality conflicts, I felt like, rather than the actual arguments for and against.
Agreed. Yes, I think that's true.
Which, I mean, granted, it's a Marvel movie, therefore, what you're really interested in here is it really devolves into a conflict between Steve Rogers and Tony Stark, Captain America versus Iron Man. And
dividing the two groups.
Dividing into two groups. And it really kind of is about the two men and their visions for the Avengers are and
their visions.
Haha.
Yeah.
And so in that way, I kind of felt like they weren't debating the merits of the Sokovia Accords. They were debating something else.
Right.
And I don't know. Is that a weakness in the movie?
It kind of got away from the Sokovia Accords and became about Winter Soldier and the Tony's parents and other stuff.
Although, really, in a way, isn't this how people actually tend to decide things? We like to think that we're acting on principle, the principle of the thing.
But when it comes down to it, it's really about...
When it comes down to it, it's a lot of times about our personal histories, our baggage, our feelings, our emotions, our relationships, our connections. And here you see that all writ large. It's really about the relationships between these people and who do they trust, who do they distrust.
Sure, that's true. One of the things I noticed, by the way, in this is in the two sides. You on one side you have Tony Stark, not Natasha, Black Widow, Colonel Rhodes, Spider-Man, and T'Challa. They're all one side, and you have Captain America, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Ant-Man.
You forgot to put Vision on Tony's
side. Hawkeye is... No. Oh, Vision. Right, I said was Vision. Hawkeye's on Cap's side. Vision is on Tony's side.
Right.
Okay. All of the people on Tony's side... this is going to be a spoiler, so skip ahead about 2 minutes if you haven't seen all of them and you don't want to be spoiled. All of the people on Tony's side come to a bad end except for Spider-Man, although I haven't seen the latest Spider-Man movie, so maybe he comes, something bad happens to him. But, you know, Tony, Avengers Endgame, Natasha, Avengers Endgame, Vision, also, that's Avengers Infinity War. Rhodey in this movie breaks his back, and then T'Challa, Black Panther, well, Chadwick Boseman died and they said they're not replacing him, so something bad has happened to T'Challa in the MCU, and the only one left standing is Spider. If I were Spider-Man, I'd be a little worried. So it's I just think that's an interesting, was it planned?
I don't think so. I don't think they could have planned.
Are you kidding me? They planned everything else. I mean, they planned things out well in advance.
I don't think they planned to kill off T'Challa, frankly.
Well, no, they didn't. That's true. So it would have been Spider-Man and T'Challa. It's a really interesting coincidence, though. Kind of funny. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if it means anything.
I don't know.
Captain America: Civil War, good movie. Still not as good as Winter Soldier, I think.
Maybe.
I think because of those flaws, I don't enjoy the conflict among the good guys as much as I enjoy the good guys fighting the bad guys.
I suppose I kind of like it. I like the relationship, the strains, the moral ambiguities, the push me, pull you. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it makes for an interesting story.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's several moments in the battle scene when, you know, Hawkeye and Natasha, like, are we still friends?
Right. They're fighting. It's like, we're still friends, right? Oh, yeah.
Right. I disagree with what you're doing. I think you're doing the wrong thing and I'm going to try to stop you. And because we're both high power people, we're going to try to stop each other physically. But it doesn't have to turn personal, except Tony makes it personal.
Right. It becomes personal. Well, it's personal for Tony and Steve because Steve's defending his friend.
Right.
And Tony is mad. Well, eventually about his parents.
Right. But for everybody else, there seems to be a lot more emotional distance and like, I will fight you, but they're fighting, but they're not like fighting to hurt or to kill or to maim. They're fighting to prevent.
Except for T'Challa.
Well, yes.
T'Challa wants to kill Bucky because he thinks Bucky killed his dad.
Yeah, T'Challa's in it for revenge, definitely. Which is why I'm kind of reluctant to put him on Tony Stark's side. I think he's against Captain America, but he's not really for Tony.
Allies of convenience.
Right.
Yeah.
Because T'Challa's got his own agenda. And I thought that storyline where... it's talking about, you know, like the problems of revenge played out
especially
really
at
nicely.
The ending where he confronts Zemo, where he finds out Zemo is the one who killed his father and doesn't take his revenge.
Right. And sort of recognizes that revenge is not a winning game. Like you can't win when you're out for revenge.
Yes.
And I really love that about T'Challa's character, that he's able to step back and say, whoa, I made a mistake. I almost made a really bad mistake. I almost killed the wrong guy. Maybe this whole vengeance thing is not such a great idea after all.
Right.
That was a great moment.
So one of the element in this story that kind of got me was the whole Sharon Carter thing where Steve and Sharon Carter kind of start a relationship. There's a kiss and they never go anywhere with that in the rest of the movies. That just gets kind of dropped. Now, Sharon will show up again in Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is, she has changed a lot. She's
right.
Because of the events of this movie, she's gone rogue and all this other stuff. But yeah, it's kind of weird that they start that and they just kind of drop it. That's just, never developed.
I mean, in a way, I think that they just needed a device for him to...
For her to help him?
For her to help him.
Yeah.
And they kind of implied that there was some definite flirtation when she was the...
The nurse down the hall.
The nurse down the hall.
Yeah.
I felt like there could have been something else developed there at some point and then kind of lost opportunity. But then again, maybe, well, life has lost opportunities sometimes.
Yep. So the next movie is... by the way, just before we get into the next movie, I think this is my third time watching this. My first time watching this, I found it very confusing.
Right.
But this time watching it, I understood everything that was going on. I understood the different lines. I did not get lost like I did. Like, what is going on in this place in Siberia? Who is this and where are these people? I usually can follow a story, and I was just lost the first time. I don't know why.
Because it's a very complex story.
I guess.
There's a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah. So the next movie we're going to watch is Doctor Strange. Right. That's next week. How do you think?
Also confusing.
Yes.
Story.
I've only seen it once, I think.
I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
I feel like the kids are not getting as confused as we were, or maybe they're just not vocal about it.
They're young and able. Then they go and talk about it with each other. So that too. But I think the complex storylines go over their heads and they just enjoy it for the ride.
Probably.
They catch the stuff that they can catch. But I'm curious how they're going to like Doctor Strange, because there are some weird elements in Doctor Strange.
Right.
I wonder if they'll catch that or if they'll just fly right by them. It also takes a while to get going.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, what's his name? His first name, the Strange's first name.
Stephen
Strange. So his whole journey to the superpower takes a while.
It does take a while.
I'm curious if they're going to be able to be patient for that. Well, we get to watch Doctor Strange next week.
Right.
So Doctor Strange, Guardians 2, Spider-Man. I'm looking forward to Spider-Man.
I haven't seen any of the Spider-Man movies.
So. Oh, yeah. They're going to love it because he's young. I mean, Spider-Man in Civil War was a lot of fun.
They liked him.
They liked. Yeah. And they're going to love Spider-Man. I know it. All right.
So, yeah, I've also been continuing to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I have to
say, I'm kind of impressed at how good the writing is.
I'm kind of surprised that you like it as much as you do. Like, I figured you'd kind of like it and to kind of pick up on more of the Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff. But I'm a little surprised at how much you were really enjoying this. Because, frankly, by the time I got to the seasons you're in, I was kind of getting a little like, this is getting...
Were you watching it as they came out?
Yes.
Like one a week?
Yes, and that might be part of it.
I think part of it is that I'm watching them, like, much more compactly. Like,
you're binging
them. I'm binge-watching them. Yes, I am. And so I think I'm capable to keep the plot lines straighter than if I was
having to wait a week. That's true.
But I feel like the way they handle a large ensemble cast is pretty impressive. And that I feel like there are some of the seasons so far have kind of dragged a little bit in that this probably could have the story could have been told in fewer episodes. But in general, one of the things I was remarking on earlier today with you was that they have a lot of really good, poignant character moments that they don't belabor, but they let simply be, which is like, This character moment could have become the focus of the entire episode and we could have built up to it and made a big deal out of it.
Wallowed in somebody's emotional response.
Right. And they don't. So often there's restraint where there's a moment that will pack a huge emotional punch and then we move on to the next action, the next beat without really wallowing in it. And I appreciate that. There's a lot of complexity, a lot of really good relationships among the characters, and they're allowed to just be good relationships without becoming soap operatic.
Yes.
Yeah, there is a little bit of soap opera romance stuff, especially with Fitz and Simmons,
yeah.
But even there, I feel like they've managed it with some restraints in places where I could imagine this going way over the top. Like, yes, it's over the top in some respects because it's comic book universe. And yet at the same time, I feel like they don't get over the top with them as people.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't wallow like some other series do, like Star Trek Discovery Deaths, for instance, which, oh my gosh, wallows. All right. So that's what we've been reading and watching. Let's talk about this week's mass readings. They clearly had a through line, a common note that was in all of them. So just to remind you, there was the reading from Isaiah where he says, I am a man of unclean lips, living among a people of unclean lips. Then in 1 Corinthians 15, 1 to 11, St. Paul talks about being called to preach the gospel and says in that one, for I am the least of the apostles, not fit to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. He has this Popeye moment. And then, and then Luke 5, 1 to 11, where Jesus tells them the Peter, it's the calling of Peter and Andrew, James and John. And he has them put their nets into the deep. And they pull up the excessive catch of fish, and that prompts Simon Peter to fall at Jesus' knees and say, depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. And it's these three very interesting notes in each reading about recognition of my own unworthiness, but yet I am called to by you.
Yeah, I loved Father's homily on this morning. He said the theme for him was, here I am, I come to do your will, like our response to God. But he notes that a lot of times people's relation with the church can be, I'm going to pull back because I am sinful and not worthy, and therefore I'm going to pull away from the church because I don't belong here.
Yes.
My sins are getting in the way of any kind of relationship with God, so I'm just going to pull back. Or the church is too full of sinful people, and I just don't like that, and I'm uncomfortable with it, so I'm going to pull back. And those are both really deeply human moments. But what God wants to do is he wants to not call us because we're saints, but he wants to meet us in our sinfulness and call us not while we are sinful, not
he calls us until... he calls us while we are yet still sinners, but calls us to be forgiven and take up the mantle that he has for us,
right? And he comes to forgive us our sins. He comes as the healer, the physician of our souls. But our mission is not like, well, first you're going to be perfect and then you're going to be sent out on a mission. It's
right,
we are called as imperfect people. I love that imagery in Isaiah where he says, I am a man of unclean lips, and the angel plucks out the coal and burns away the impurities on his lips.
Oh, you're unclean lips? Okay, here you go.
I mean, it's a horrific image if you take it literally, but
yeah.
But thinking about the imagery in the Old Testament, you get about purifying by fire, you know, gold refined by fire or silver refined by fire. This idea of God's love is this burning flame which wants to consume us.
Right. But purify us, not to destroy us, but to purify us.
Right. It burns away. It burns not us, but it burns our attachments to sin. It burns away the bad and leaves the good. It's sort of like the cauterizing effect where you, in order to stop bleeding, you burn away the
right
the tissue.
Well, or abrading a dead tissue from a amputation or something like that. But it's also one of the images of purgatory, where purgatory is a refining fire. It's the place where our attachments to sin are burned away so we can enter into heaven pure. And one of the prayers that one of the priests says at every mass, one of the inaudible prayers he says, is just before he reads the gospel, he prays, you know, Lord, cleanse my lips so that I may worthily proclaim your word. Something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what it is. So Father also told the story of St. Jerome, which I managed to find online.
Okay, I loved this story of St. Jerome. This was really good.
So I found this on this website of the Desert Nuns. They are the Our Lady of Solitude Monastery, Poor Clares of Perpetual Adoration in Tonopah, Arizona. So they had it on their website. So here's the story. After many years spent in Jerusalem translating the Word of God, because Jerome translated the Bible from Greek and Aramaic and Hebrew into Latin, creating the Vulgate. Anyway, Jerome finished his grand project just days before Christmas. And so to celebrate his accomplishment, Jerome decided to spend Christmas Eve in nearby Bethlehem in one of the many grottos that dot the countryside. According to the ancient account, sometime around midnight, Jesus appeared to him saying, "Jerome, what will you give me for my birthday?" Immediately and enthusiastically, Jerome declared, "Lord, I give you my translation of your word." But instead of congratulating him, Jesus simply replied, "No, Jerome, that's not what I want." Jerome was speechless. Then he began to complain and remonstrate with Jesus, asking why he'd let him go on for 40 years, far from home, laboring at something other than what God most wanted from him. But Jesus remained silent. Jerome started suggesting other ways of honoring Jesus' birthday: fasting, becoming a hermit, giving his possessions to the poor. To each of these, Jesus replied, "No, Jerome, that's not what I want most." Finally, Jerome protested, "Then you tell me, Lord. Tell me what would give you the most joy on your birthday, and you shall have it."
Maybe he should have led with that.
Yeah. And notice that Jerome is exasperated here, because I just think of Jerome being that way. So he says, "Tell me what you would give you the most joy on your birthday, and you shall have it." "Do you promise, Jerome?" "Yes, Lord, anything at all." And Jesus replied, "Give me your sins." That's what all Jesus wanted, was him to give over his sins. By the way, Jerome sounds like a parent trying to get the toddler to eat. "Tell me anything. I will get you anything if you would only just eat or go to sleep or stop crying." Yes. I would give you anything. But back to the story. I mean, it's a great story of how we think we know what God wants from us. But what God wants from us most of all is our repentance, is to just turn our hearts toward
Him. Not what we do, but not what we can do for Him, but what He can do for us.
Yes.
You know, "I want to do all these great and mighty and wonderful deeds for you, God." Yeah, but what He really wants is to heal us, to heal our hearts, to purify us.
Right. And then we can go do the things, the mission that He has for us. But really, the first thing He wants for us is to just repent, to give Him our sins. Because that's what He came for. He didn't come to give us the jobs. He came to forgive sins. And then once our sins are forgiven, then we can go do stuff for Him. But first, so that's, you know, it's the nice story. So I really like that. It also made me think of that scene from The Chosen where they pull up the fish and Simon Peter has that reaction. I think they did a really good job in that.
That was good. It was a nice moment.
All right. I think that should do it for us for this week. We'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Deacon Anthony R., Christian E., Katie K., Andrew W., and Simon M. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give. make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So we'd love to hear your feedback. As usual, we want to hear some more feedback. Now we got to have feedback every week. So, like, one of you's got to write in at least.
Right. So somebody, do it. Do it.
Okay, you're feeling the Holy Spirit touching your heart. You're the one. You know who I'm talking to. You send us the feedback. So you can do that by going to sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets, BETTS, at sqpn.com. We'll have links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com. Be sure to follow Raising the Bets on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the aforementioned YouTube channel, youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.